Hello, and welcome to another episode of FTU Life After the Military. I'm your host, Tony Rodriguez, and today I'm joined by two repeat offenders, Chris and Tim. And because I like to yap a lot, I took a little bit of the time away from them the last time they were on here, and so I wanted to call them back. I respect both. I think they're both pretty smart guys, and I just wanted to give them the opportunity to talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. We were just discussing conspiracy theories. So if they want to go down that rabbit hole, by all means. I just watched the movie Leprechaun, and 30 years later, it's still just as crappy.
It holds
discuss
up.
Discuss that.
You know, that was the very first movie that I snuck into the theater to see, because it was rated R and I wasn't old enough to buy a ticket.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking about that movie the other day with my wife. And, I mean, Jennifer Aniston, she holds up too.
That's right, she was in that.
Mm-hmm.
I completely forgot about that.
I think it was her first one.
I think you're right.
Yeah, it was. They're running a like some sort of feature on Comet Channel, Comet, and they're showing Leprechaun 1 through 4, and then Leprechaun in Space.
Yep, I was like the second one where they had the big fan. And like the guy and like the fan looked like the naked woman, and the guy was like, "Oh, look at these naked women. This is definitely what happens in real life." And he puts his face into the fan and dies. And I thought that was pretty realistic, honestly. And I was a teenager, or maybe no, I wasn't even a teenager. I was probably 8 or 9 when I saw it, so I was real excited to see that. So I can't wait till I'm old enough to see a naked lady in a garage.
Because there's so many of them in garages.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I thought a lot of things were going to happen when I was an adult. I thought there was going to be a lot more quicksand. There's not. Like, there was definitely a lot of threat of quicksand when I was a kid, based on all the shows that I was watching, you know? And so, I mean, if there's a lot of quicksand, there could have been a lot of naked ladies in garages. Who knows?
That's true. That's true. Like, so much of my life was informed by movies of the 80s. Like, pretty sure that's why I joined the Army. I grew up on Missing in Action and Commando and Rambo.
Commando,
That's what I thought the Army was going to be like. I was sorely disappointed.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be more like a Van Damme movie where, you know, I go AWOL and then I end up in some sort of underground karate tournament, breaking bricks with my bare fist. Not at all.
All the above, yeah. I joined on a whim and that's literally the only thing I knew about the military. I had nobody in my family was in the military except for like an uncle that didn't really talk about the military at all. No, not like because he was in crazy stuff, just because he didn't talk about it. And so all of my military experience before I joined the military was based on 80s movies. So I thought I was going to die in a war that wasn't even happening. There was no war when I joined. I'm like, there'll be a war. I'm going to last like 10 minutes tops. And that's it. That'll be the end of me. So hopefully no war happens. Like some extra character.
Well,
it did. And there was so many of them. They keep coming.
I thought it was funny, though. Tim, last time we talked, you were saying how you got out and you went into the reserves. You went to the Middle East more in the reserves than I did my entire time in active duty.
Right, yeah. But again, like last time, that was because in the reserves is a bit of a different animal with civil affairs in that, you know, they're always short people, like always. So they're always trying to fill the gaps and moving people from other units temporarily to fill those spots. So I could hop on anything I wanted to go on and get there. And I hated the garrison life in the reserves. It was awful. Didn't like it. It was not that it was awful. I just didn't like it. So I figured if I was going to be in the military, I might as well be doing my job instead of training to do it one weekend a month.
So did they not like mention any other part of the planet?
What do you mean?
Like, hey, you can go to Africa or?
Oh yeah. Like HOA was a mission that was, you know.
Oh, I think Tim might've froze.
So it was trying to reconnect.
So yeah, there's definitely a lot of missions for the reserves in the civil affairs to go anywhere they want. But during that time though, I mean, it was all, it was am like for him, I know it was
am I back?
The surge in Iraq, the surge in Afghanistan. Those were all happening at the same, you know, around that time. So even if he wanted to go somewhere what else, I'm sure there shit. Wasn't a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just like more power to him, man. Cause he's telling me, it's like, yeah, I went back three more times.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping Jehoshaphat's, like I said, that's enough for me, man.
He was volunteering. Yeah, he just kept going. I mean, he always liked that part of the military. It was the nonsense that kind of pushed him out of the active side. All the garrison.
I mean,
nonsense.
Once you get used to like, hey man, like we have to put the miles on the vehicles, and your dental is the most important thing that's ever happened in the history of the world.
Right.
Make sure that the vehicles are online. We haven't moved them in 5 months. You got to make sure that they're online still. It's pretty easy.
I think for me, it was always like the fake crisis. Everything was a crisis, even though it was like not a crisis ever. Like we've definitely lived through crisis, you know, on actual combat deployments. And you come back and you're like, this is not a crisis. Y'all need to calm down. Like, this is silly. And once you understand that, then you can calm people down and eventually hopefully you can get to a position where you have some authority to calm people down and like get everyone to chill out. But you know, if you're not in that position and you know, you're that young soldier and you just like, you've been to combat or you've been on a deployment or two or three or five or whatever. And you have these young or not so young NCOs or officers above you that just haven't done that. And they're just like, everything is a crisis always. And you, again, he said like dental is the most important thing, and he just gets real, real annoying as a young soldier for sure.
Back to him.
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
All right. Sorry about that. That literally never happened.
No, that's fine. The thing is like your picture was like so perfect. It didn't look like you had frozen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So we were still talking to you for a few seconds afterwards. Like
I could still hear you. Even after you mentioned that I was gone.
Oh. Okay.
It was weird. Right. It just like completely booted me off the platform.
We were talking a lot of crap about you, so glad at least you heard it.
That's fair. That's fair. Deservedly so.
Now we were saying, so
like I was asking Chris, it's like you never considered like, I don't know, going somewhere else? Was that an option for you?
It was, yeah. The Horn of Africa was a mission that was ongoing while I was there. I don't know. It didn't seem as entertaining. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, it was. You hear about people who talk about getting. I don't want to say getting addicted to it, but for the lack of a better word, I mean, you kind of do sometimes. You know, when you come back home and that whole scene at the end of what's that movie?
The Hurt Locker.
Thank you. Yes, where he's standing in that cereal aisle and he's just like, "What the hell am I doing here?" You know that I crapped on that movie for many, many years. That was the most realist part of that movie. The part of the movie that really made sense to me.
Maybe the only realist part of that movie. I think everything else was unrealistic.
Yeah,
but for sure that for part. Sure.
And it just like the volume on everything else just got turned down when I was back here and back in civilian life, quote unquote, you know, and it just didn't, I missed it honestly until I realized why that was so messed up.
So last time, like we ran out of time, Tim, but I don't know if you had any comments or any advice or just anything about mental health. Because like I was saying, we were talking about that one gentleman I met up with on LinkedIn, and his story is pretty epic. How you look at his picture on LinkedIn, he's a young E5 ready to take on the world, and where he is now, it's like, whew, it's drastic change in 17 years.
Can you hear me? No.
Oh, I think he froze again.
What is going on here?
Double tap.
It's awesome because his picture is always just so, it's like perfect, you know? So it's like, is he frozen or is he on?
I just love, I love the Evil Dead stuff in the background. It's like my favorite movie. So the fact that he has both the shotgun and the hand chainsaw just makes me happy. I wouldn't be surprised if he made that chainsaw because he does make those props, which is pretty cool. He has that prop company. Have to ask him.
Tim was making right now, I don't know if you watched South Park like in the later years, mm-hmm. but they were doing one about the COVID, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Yeah, and Eric Cartman, they were doing classes online
yeah.
over Zoom. And Eric Cartman every day would do his little trick work. And he would pretend to eat trees. And then he would get like a little picture and put it on himself. And then he'd go out and play for the rest of the day.
I mean, I'm like, man, honestly,
is Tim doing that to us?
Might be. Might be. I wouldn't mind doing that. You know, not the job I'm in now, but if I had a crap job, I definitely would do something similar. Like, oh, man, this Wi-Fi is just not good.
So where are you working now?
I work for 26 Technologies. It's a government contract company, like, you know, every other veteran out there.
Well, yeah, but, I'm doing that too.
Yeah. I wasn't going to do it though. I live in like Central North Carolina, and it's about the same distance to get to, Fort Liberty as it would be to get to Raleigh. And Raleigh has the Raleigh Research Triangle. It's like it's so much stuff up there. So I had some good leads with Cisco and some other biochem companies doing project management, doing consulting, stuff like that. And a buddy of mine, actually an old civil affairs buddy, Marcus Foreman, saw me on LinkedIn and he said, hey man, I see you on LinkedIn, I see you retiring. So, I have this buddy who works at this company, has this really cool tech. I think you should give him a call. And when you get out of the military, especially during COVID time, it's 2020, December 2020. I was like, heck yeah, let me do that. He's call, figure out what's going on. When I saw the tech, and I was like, man, if I had this when I was civil affairs, if I had this even in the infantry as an infantry officer, it would have saved lives for sure. And so I jumped on board. And the company culture is, not to blow them up, but it's phenomenal. And I really, really like working there. So it's been a really good fit. I get to stay in, the loop. Like for the last year of the military, I was really trying to not get away from current event stuff, but really get away from it a little bit. You know what I mean? I don't have to like pay too much attention to it anymore. And then I didn't realize how much I missed that, so it kind of hits the travel button for me. It hits the, staying up on current events, especially, the global stuff going on now. It's interesting. A lot of the operations you see in the news we're involved in some way or another, supporting, the soldiers, supporting DOD. So it's pretty cool.
You back, Tim?
I am. I don't know what's going on, man. I apologize. I'm sure that's very, very annoying for you guys.
I know you said your wife's doing a podcast too, right? Maybe it's just
we've never had a bandwidth issue like that before. It's like internet just keeps dropping out altogether. Like it keeps losing connection. Anyway,
maybe California's infrastructure problems are creeping over into Arizona. I don't know.
What do you mean, maybe?
I mean, that's where they get all the power from, isn't it? Those dams you guys got?
Yeah. It's funny. I was just there a couple of weeks ago, too, in San Francisco. That was an interesting time at the airport, let me tell you.
I was there last year. It was pretty bad. I can't imagine what it's like right now.
Yeah, I didn't go anywhere except the hotel and the airport and the customer. That was it.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I went up to San Francisco, I think that was the best part was just driving around so I could sightsee, but I didn't really want to stop anywhere and get out.
Yeah.
Lock all the doors on the way out.
Yeah, all the zombies, man. It's crazy.
I mean, I stopped so I could get clam chowder, then got back into the cabin. Like, let's keep on going.
Yeah. Sad. Sad state of affairs up there.
So.
Hey, Tim, do you still have that? You still have that prop company? Did you make those props in the background?
I did, yeah, actually.
Yeah. That's awesome, dude. They look just like the movie.
They better, because the chainsaw is actually, I found the exact model that they used in the movie. on eBay for like $20, and I gutted it, and then basically turned it into the same thing.
Does it work?
No. Well, it did when I bought it.
I mean, but does it work? Did you make it like make a chainsaw?
No, no. I had to pull the engine out.
Okay.
It's the only way you can actually fit your hand inside of it.
Got it. Yeah. Man, that makes me sad. The movie really hyped me up with you having like a hand chainsaw. It's my favorite movie. favorite movie series.
It is fantastic. Did you watch the show?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I wish they kept going with it.
I know. Same.
I love Sam Raimi, too. Show.
Yeah, he does some good stuff.
I
did a
kind of a problem, time. Though, walking around with a chainsaw in your hand that actually worked.
It's not a problem with the zombies around.
It's because Plus, he had the option in the third movie, he could change it out to a mechanical hand.
Mm, yep.
What was that? Army of Darkness, right?
Yeah.
Which was also an awesome like iPhone game back, 10 years ago, like the old iPhones.
I still have that game.
I love it. I just beat it. I loved it. I played it. I used to beat it over and over.
Yeah, I've played it multiple times for that very reason.
I should probably re-download it. I didn't think it was still around.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's still around because I have an Android.
Mm.
It just kept, every time I switch phones, it just kept reloading it onto my phone.
Nice. So fun. It's like
So it's funny, Chris, so you're talking about how you're transitioning out and like you ended up being a contractor. I also was just, I don't know, wanted to get away from the military, but ended up taking that job just as a placeholder for about a year. And then I realized, why am I running away? I don't know about you guys, but like in the military, every time I got into a new position, I was trying to figure out like, how do I get into my next position? Right. To like kind of move up.
Yeah.
And I kind of carried that over into this.
I was doing that up until right before I left. When I was about to be moved into, I was about to be up for E7. And I was like, I don't want any part of that. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I did. My career was so strange, man, because I did stuff like basically like 5-year blocks. So I did like when I met you all, the Avenger repairman, right? Back when I first enlisted, I don't know where had no idea what the military even really was. I picked the Army out of a hat for the most part. Basically, it came on as the Army and Navy, and I was like, I don't want to be on a ship for 6 months with a bunch of dudes, at a time. And then flash forward, within 2 years, I was in a tent with a bunch of dudes, like 40 people in a GP medium, with like bump beds for 6 months or more.
Living the submarine life in a tent.
Yeah, that's what it was, for sure. But it was like 5-year chunks. So like Avenger Repairman, 5 years. Since Civil Affairs, when that first became a thing, then I did that 5 years enlisted. Commissioned as an officer to the infantry life for 5 years, loved that. And then came back to Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty. And I was at SWCC working out there at Camp McCall for 5 years. So just... And that's like project management. So like just kept these chunks. And like you, Rod, I was looking for just something different. And I get kind of antsy around the 4-year mark. Like, okay, now what's next? Got to find something. And it's not like, let's find something, it's kind of similar. It's like, let's go something completely different. Let's go, civil affairs to enlisted as infantry officer. Like, let's go from infantry to project management, which is a little closer, I guess. But so when I transitioned to the contracting world, I was like, I want to do something completely different. But I ended up supporting the same people I was working with towards the end of my career. And I really enjoy it. I enjoy mentoring soldiers. And I have that opportunity a lot of times. Like every day I'm talking with soldiers and about, they're always coming and asking questions about what did I do? What do I do? Not just the tools we have in the company, but also, life experience. And it just kind of checks that box for me. Makes you feel like I'm still giving back to this young generation.
That's great, and I like hearing that because I like my job because I like the people I work with, right? There's some retirees and there are some people who have no idea what the military was. They're completely out. And so I go to work and I do my job. I'm an analyst, instructor, provide classes for these people. But here's the information. If you want to go further, we can talk about it. If you don't, I'm not going to be offended if you don't listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
You're an adult. You did this and you can go die for your country. You might not be able to buy cigarettes or drink, you can die for your country.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you don't want to listen to me, I'm not going to be offended. Like, I'm not. If you want some to talk about stuff, we can, about military life or whatever. And there's that good balance now. There's that separation. And mm-hmm. that's what I like. And yeah. also, I think I told you both, I'm working on a PhD.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I can't wait to call you doctor.
What's crazy is I realized Jumbo Jehoshaphat's, I'm an expert on geopolitics.
It's fair.
And it's like, what I need is a PhD and just to have some articles written. And so I'm in the process of writing two articles, one for SWCC and one for JSOW. And then I'm going to have contributed to two chapters in two different books. It's like, this is, I don't know if it should be this easy to be considered an expert or if I'm just a like total fraud. Mm. I'm just pulling the eyes or the wool over everybody's eyes.
Maybe you just want to call a doctor. Yeah.
Right. That's the thing about being an expert though, man. It's like, what really is an expert? An expert is someone who just knows more than I do about a subject.
Yeah.
And I would say that you know more on that subject than 99.9% of the people in the world. So that in turn makes you an expert.
And that's what makes me laugh is like, people ask me questions like, you're asking me? I'm still surprised by it. Like, you should just look around. It's like, there's somebody else here? It's like, no, no your opinion. Oh, okay. Sure.
You mentioned that. Do you guys, and I have come across this myself multiple times. It kind of doesn't even matter in what job field or what I'm doing, is I always feel the imposter syndrome is like on top of me all the time. Is that just me? Or do you guys ever, have you ever felt that?
I felt it over my career for sure. Matter of fact, you know, my wife, Carmen, she feels it like crazy. I married up for sure. She just finished her psychiatric or mental health nurse practitioner degree, and then she board certified first time. Like she's working in these like forensic groups that helps to solve cold case murders with like the leading forensic experts from around the world. So she's always like, has that imposter syndrome like really, really bad. I'm like, Carmen, you are amazing. And she's like, nah, I don't even belong in these groups. I'm like, if you didn't belong in those groups, like you wouldn't be in those groups. So I think like, you know, Tim, I think it's more common than people think it is, especially like you said, with, you know, Rod being an expert on geopolitics or those kind of things for sure.
So yeah, I used to, Tim, I really like this PhD program because the support that I get from the other people in the cohort and all the cohorts, because it's a newer program. It only came out in 2020. I didn't experience this type of support in the military. And what I realize is like for me, not only in the cohort, but in my job, I'm like that bridge in between the military life and just the normal people. So I can explain things to the normal people when they don't like, I don't understand all those letters that just came out of their mouths. Like it doesn't make any sense. Like none of that applies to us. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Or when a regular person is having an issue at work, I can explain it to the military people. Hey bro, what you said is appropriate to like the military, but these are just regular people. You can't like drop F-bombs left and right when you're talking to regular people. That's inappropriate. Oh, I didn't mean it. It's like, yeah, I understand. You just got to catch yourself. So I'm not going to say I'm 100% confident in who I am and what I do, but I'm a good 75%. So when I look to my left and my right, it's like, I'm not the best, but I'm doing enough so I can stand here with you guys.
Well, that makes sense. I get that.
It's the old Sockham 75%.
Well, you've always been a high achiever, Rod. I mean, just speaking of Sockham, like that's not an easy course to get through by any means. And like you also had kind of a strange path as a career, you know, throughout.
Well, I was telling Tim, it's like I earned a, what was that? A fail grade Article 15 and a general letter of reprimand. Woo! They don't just give those out. You earned those.
You definitely earned those.
I had an instructor at Redstone who said you couldn't be a truly great technician unless you had at least one Article 15.
Yeah. That was definitely the generation for sure. Because, I mean, all those first sergeants we had back in the 82nd, the Sergeant's Major, like they had multiple Article 15s yeah, and sure. DUIs and the like.
Well, I won't mention him by name, but you remember that squad leader that we had?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Snoop. He yeah. was on like his third or fourth. And I don't even know how he was still in the Army.
One, I remember showing up to Redstone, right? And then our drill sergeant for the Echoes was a...
Dynamite.
Parker, right?
Yeah, yeah. Dynamite.
Yeah. Didn't he just come off like extra duty or something?
Yeah,
I remember he had gotten in trouble for, I don't know if he got a DUI or if he like smacked his wife around. I'm not making light of it, but I know he had gotten in trouble. It's like, wow, this is odd.
Redstone was crazy, man. That whole experience, like coming from basic and then going into that and being there for so long. And you guys were even there even longer than I was, I think.
I was there for about 6 months, I think.
Okay, they were about the same then. Yeah. And I was on night shift too, so there was even like more removed, and so that was really cool for a while. For like last couple months, is like really nice to be removed from everything, except for when people got in trouble during the day. Then you got woken up, like your day got ruined. Your whole sleep cycle got ruined. But I remember specifically, actually, Timmy Diggs, young Timmy Diggs, getting in trouble one time for something that I don't know if I want to mention on here, but we all got smoked. The whole company got smoked because you were out front getting smoked and we were all watching you because
you guys were doing morning PT and I was getting dragged through the mud.
That's right. Yep.
I remember that. I remember that. That was the morning after I moved into the Marine barracks.
Yeah. That's where I was at, the Marine barracks. Yeah.
And I didn't get any sleep that night because the asshole that was in the room before me left all his locks on the lockers. So I couldn't put any of my shit away. And so I'm up all night trying to find bolt cutters from somebody who could let me into the closets so I could put my stuff away so I wouldn't get jacked up the next day.
There was only
one way that night was playing out, and it's exactly how it did.
It was like 24 years ago. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, what was his name? There was one guy who he had like a lot of chest hair, right? He might have left, or he might have done this after you guys left for airborne school.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
And he shaved a big giant E into his chest hair.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
What are you doing, bro?
His last name was Spots. He was crazy. He was in my class.
Was he?
Which is just funny how we get so detached from being like isolated in basic training, and then in Redstone you're still not allowed off until you phase up.
Yeah.
Man, I thought that was such a ripoff, the whole phasing up thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I had fun. We go to those little the Econo lodges, and first time I ever saw a prostitute, like the real. Real Echo Lodge prostitutes. And then I forget who it was. Even if I remember, I wouldn't say the name. Probably. We're coming out of this party, like a little hotel party, because we're all like, you know, 19-ish. I don't even think I was 19 yet. I was 19 yet. And we're coming out of one room, and the Econo Lodge, it was like a split, right? There was like a hallway between, you know, the two, like, basically between the buildings, splitting it. And we're coming around, and then there's definitely a prostitute there, like an old... not attractive Huntsville, Alabama prostitute. And she's like, hey, you know, $20. And he's like, how about $5? I thought he was joking. And then they went behind in the dumpster area. I turned into a man at Huntsville. That I went to a wedding in one of the towns, like the next towns over. I forget I'm not good with the names. So one of the kids who's always on extra duty all the time married a stripper in a church. And that's the first time I ever was, you know, half buzzed in a church. That was interesting.
Yeah. good times in a, because I never figured out, like, why are the people in Huntsville, why are they so standoffish against the military? Like, what? But now I know. That now I sense. Understand.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember.
I remember
or if you ever
remember
went
Quinn,
there.
Right? You guys remember Quinn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I talked to him a couple years ago. He's getting ready. He thought about joining the military again, but then he ended up having a kid or two.
It happens.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one night, yep, on a Saturday, I was asleep, and he comes. I was in the Alpha Company barracks. Mm-hmm. So not, you know, in the Marine barracks and up in Shangri-La, the Ivory Tower, but, you know, just a little level below.
Drill Sergeant Central.
He comes pounding on my door, right? It's like midnight or 1 a.m, and he's covered in blood. it's like, what the hell happened? And he's like talking, you know, super fast. I don't understand anything he's saying. He went out to the club with one of the other guys, and they ended up getting in a fight. And like five guys beat up the other guy, and two of them held Quinn down so he couldn't do anything. It's like, what should I do? It's like, wow. Oh. Probably tell a drill sergeant, because I don't see how you're going to keep this one quiet. It's like, where's the other guy? He's in the hospital. Probably tell the drill sergeant, because you're probably not going to keep this one quiet, man.
That's crazy.
So I gave him my jacket. It's like, here's my jacket. So cover yourself up, because you look like you were in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? It's like okay. And so, of course, he goes over to his barracks, goes upstairs, goes to his room, and goes to sleep. It's like, awesome, dude. So the next morning I get called out. Right? Like, what the hell happened? Like, I don't know. I was asleep.
Right. Like,
I'm sorry.
Oh, my fault.
It's like, this guy's in the hospital. Do you know what? I don't know anything. I don't know where I am. I don't know my name. I'm sorry for everything. And eventually Quinn, I think he just got like extra duty or something. They didn't do anything too bad to him. And the other guy, he was supposed to go to airborne, but like they injured his wrist. So they took it out of his contract and sent him to Fort Campbell instead.
Sucks. Well, maybe for the best. You never know. Maybe he liked it up there.
I don't know. It was always just an interesting time at Redstone.
It was for sure. The Marine barracks weren't all they were cracked up to be all the time. There was a lot of Marine drill instructors in there who did not like us at all being in their building. They hated us. They let us know every chance they got.
I was on night shift, so I didn't deal with any of that piece. It was nice to be away, and like we had a little party over there sometime. We had a little break area. So that was super chill. Except for when people screwed up and I had to get up and and our PT was really hard. Who was that? Was he European? Was it drill sergeant?
Billingsley,
oh, yeah.
Panama. He was from Panama, wasn't he?
Panama. Okay, yeah. That dude
was a
run
beast.
The crap out of us. And remember that hill that was like that? There wasn't many hills around there, but there was that one hill that was like stupid. Every day we would run to that and do like sprints up and down it. Like I mean, I was in good shape for airborne school. So that was fine, but I was going to throw up every single day. And he was just us. It was like a platoon of people, not even a platoon, maybe two squads. And he would just smoke the crap out of us because he could just run forever.
Yeah,
his kryptonite was sit-ups. He couldn't do sit-ups.
Oh, okay. Wow.
They sent him for the drill sergeant of the year competition. The first sergeant was all pissed off because... God damn it, you can't... The Tice, remember?
Yeah. He was...
I want to win, private.
That dude was... worked for my uncle. The one guy in my family was in the military. He was stationed with my uncle when he was a private. My uncle was a sergeant over in Germany. They knew each other.
Oh, wow.
And then I saw him again on one of our deployments. I don't forget if it was the first Afghanistan or Iraq one I was on, but he was a sergeant major. I saw him again.
I liked him. I didn't have a problem with that guy.
That was fine.
Now, the ones we had in the Deuce, I wasn't too fond of
the one. But I learned a lot from him too, man. I talk a lot of crap, and he always had our back. Well, you know, we always got smoked, but he always had our backs against everybody else.
Who was that, Alfie?
No, Brown. Joey.
Oh,
Brown.
JoJo. You're talking about JoJo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't.
It was
care
okay for
JoJo.
Him to mess with you, but nobody else was going to mess with you.
So he liked you guys. He hated me because I was older.
Hmm.
And he made it perfectly clear that he did not like me in any way, shape, or form.
It probably was, he couldn't push you around as much, honestly, man. Because he just...
Oh, that makes sense, actually.
Like, it's probably a threatening, because we were young, man. I was like, again, I was like 19 when I went to 82nd. Like, that was, you know, he was around when I was like 19 and 21. It was... So...
Yeah, I just... I don't know. Him, Beetlejuice, you know. Beetlejuice was a character, man.
F that guy, man. He's the whole reason we lost all that stuff in Iraq, that when all our tents burned down. That's completely on him.
Come on, that was a good time.
Yeah, that was good times, all right. Sometimes we had a good morale only because we had each other, but that was a complete what not to do as a senior NCO. Like looking back at these things, misery. Like yeah, understanding like real leadership looks like and like what real NCO. And man, I would love to go back and talk to these guys and like, what were you thinking? Like, why would you ever do that? Like, where was your like?
Rico Suave was trying to get as many girlfriends as he could. He didn't have time to bother with soldiers.
Beetlejuice?
Rico Suave, the company commander.
The company commander.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, yeah. I forgot about that dude, too.
And he was like best friends with the Raytheon rep, Hector. He like, oh, God, he was in love with Hector. Like, he was always over there drinking Heineken's in Hector's tent.
Meanwhile, our tents burned down.
I had never seen so many sergeant majors like be upset. Hey, why are you dressed like that? It's like, my tents burned up. I'm so sorry.
Was, I mean, that was good. That was fun.
Instantly.
Yeah. We were running around with like all mixed up, you know, uniforms and PTs and whatever. I had a whole full set of PTs because I was wearing it because we were building a gym because it was like New Year's Day. I was building a gym with everybody. But I was one of the only ones that had like a full set of something. Most people was like half of something or half something else. And we're all like singing Cadence, like a rat, marching around like, screw it, we're going to sing Cadence. We had high morale, but only because we were like so mad at everybody, at all the leadership up and down for not singing.
We had nothing else to lose after that point.
Oh, yeah. I was just done. I was over it.
I try to explain to people that we were in the most hated platoon, in the most hated company, in the most hated battalion, in the most hated brigade, of all of the 82nd Airborne Division.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, we were a CAV. I mean,
no, but even the CAV, at least they're like, okay, wow, whatever. Like but they're a bunch of assholes, but at least it seemed like they stuck together.
That's fair. Yeah,
they were the redheaded like,
our
stepchild,
own command we like, didn't like us because you guys are like electronics.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I'm sorry that I have a brain and I can use it. Sorry, bro.
Sorry, my GG score is higher than yours. But we weren't like arrogant. It wasn't like that. It was just, I don't know why. It was, we would just we would think through problems and find efficient ways to do things. And it was, it would make people mad. And I think like Beetlejuice specifically, Wallace, that dude, he was an idiot. Like maybe not, I don't know. I was a young soldier, so it's in perspective, but he did not like being told, he did not like people solving the problem in their own way is probably a better way to say it. And I think he was threatened by it, you know, getting away from like the name calling and stuff. But he made himself look like an idiot because of it, you know.
So I don't feel bad about using the name calling because I'm not in the Army anymore and we no longer have ranks.
No, that's fair.
I would have no problem telling JoJo and Beetlejuice straight to the face exactly what I think about them. I'm not going to go out of my way to do it.
Right.
But you're not hiding behind your rank anymore.
No, I think that's fair. I when I look back at that stuff, again, it's from different perspective. So like going through, you know, all the different, you know, leadership challenges that I've been through, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like more just perspective. Like from where I was as a young private or specialist, a young sergeant, looking up, looking at like, you know, this is crazy. What is going on? You must be an idiot. And then now it's like, well, yeah, maybe you were an idiot, but maybe it was just you were more threatened by people who could solve problems better than you, or maybe because you were older than, you know, Brown or whatever it was. Like, it's just more of a different perspective versus just like calling names. Like, that's really what I was trying to say. Because it's, God, the one thing I did like about the very one thing I liked about Wallace was the PT we did when he lined everybody on two lines. We run it and get that. the sandbag in the middle, and then you call people out. That was fun. I do that a couple times, like later, as out in different positions I was in. That was super fun. But that was it. That for like all, the whole time he was, you know, in our leadership at all. That was the only fun thing. Everything else was he's an idiot. He couldn't remember. He couldn't like pull down the C-17 door because he's too short. Couldn't do a door check. Like, what are you doing? Why are you even a drummaster on this thing? It's so crazy.
I enjoyed the feud that he had with Dodson the whole time he was there.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
The whole haircut feud. That was so entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just was like, refused to get a haircut. And then, like, we did that thing for charity towards the end of him being the first sergeant to auction off who got to throw the pie in his face.
The cream pie, like, yeah.
Yeah. And everybody, like, chipped in and bought Dodson the pie so he could do it. And that was very satisfying. I remember that.
I do remember that.
But, you know, my personal opinions are just that. My personal opinion is based off of my experience with those individuals, right? And they're, like I said, like, there are people in the military who are in the military retired will say, hey, you know, Tony, he's an okay guy. There are also a lot of people, probably a mile long, of people who's like, that guy, he's a dick. Okay. Both things can be true.
That's fair. That's fair.
Right. And whatever else I thought of Beetlejuice, the Army provided both of us an opportunity because I was going nowhere fast.
Same.
And say whatever you want. That guy got promoted to first sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he had to have done something right. He knew something. I might not have agreed with him. I might not have liked him personally, but you can't take that away from him. You can't take it away from JoJo. I don't like JoJo.
But don't like JoJo. Here's the one thing I would like counter with, not counter, it's not a counter. I agree with everything you just said, 100%. Everything you said is spot on. Like the Army, I say it all the time, like I would be a different person, I'd be a different place. I might not be alive if it wasn't from the military, like 100%. Like just, I have a lot of friends that died in the military, the majority of them were suicide, unfortunately. And then, but I have even more friends from like high school that died during the opiate crisis. They're still, you know, going through that. And that's, it's not to say I would be in that, but you know, more likely to have been in it, you know what I'm saying? Knowing where I come from. But that whole, again, that we laugh and joke about that tent it's burning down on New Year's Day in 2004 in Iraq, because no one died. But everyone could have died. Somebody could have died. All of our basic loads were in those tents, and it was all going off around us. It was like, by the grace of God, that nobody died. People were sleeping in those tents. Like it, so like those kind of situations, and there was a couple of situations, you know, throughout my career in the infantry specifically, where I had an S3 who we would go to the same poo sites every single time that stupid blimp thing came down, and they would like send out like whatever platoon from whatever all the different bases were on QRF that day. They're like, oh, go to the poo site. Like, and I went to him, and I was a senior, you know, I was a lieutenant, but I was E7 before I was a lieutenant. You know what I'm saying? So I'm a more senior person. More perspective. Had gone through that stupid tent thing, so I had more perspective. And not to rant here, but I was like, hey man, hey sir, hey major, I know I'm a lieutenant, but you're gonna get somebody effing killed. Like, I'm tired of doing this. We're all going to the same places, we're all trained the same, we're not in the same bases, so we're not talking to each other about exactly how we're going in and out of these places. Somebody's gonna get killed. And it was a big fight, and my commander had to step in. Luckily I was well respected in the company and in the battalion, so it didn't, you know, amount to much, you know, in punishment wise, but he had to step in on my behalf because I was fired up, man. I was like on the radio fired up, and then I went and was fired up when I got to his office. And within like 2 or 3 days, we almost lost one of our Lieutenant Rimpf, Nathan Rimpf, lost his legs because of that stupid mission, and then they kept doing it afterwards, and that kind of stuff that, you know, that S3 did, that battalion commander let happen, just like the same stuff that Wallace, for the piss poor decision they made with this tent situation, we should not live in those tents, it didn't make any sense, when he had a perfectly hard stand buildings, you know, in the center of the compound. Like, those kind of decisions are what, like, fired me up to become a better leader, and fires me up still, obviously, I'm kind of fired up thinking about it, of like, again, while we can laugh about it, it's like, man, we're lucky that God was protecting us that day, honestly.
So 2 points. One, going through this program, I learned that there's a big difference between leadership and management.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of what goes on in the military, it's management. And there's nothing wrong with that.
That's fair.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's not leadership. Maybe if I'm lucky, it's 1-2% of the people I encountered in my military life were actually leaders, and the rest were just managers. I was a manager. I know that. So now I'm trying to be a leader.
Sure.
Right. And two, and more importantly, Chris, I don't know if you understand this, but those tents were treated with kerosene to make them water resistant.
Bro, I know. We should probably tell the story of, like, because this is going to be really lost on people because we're talking around it. We should tell, like, the entire story of, like, what happened.
Go ahead, because
all right.
I still get a little bitter about it.
All right, I'll tell. So
I left a great guitar in that tent.
Yeah. So the base changed names a bunch of times. I guess, what was it? Ridgeway was probably the final name it was, because it was like TQ. So I'll call it Ridgeway. Yeah. So we're at Camp Ridgeway in Iraq near Fallujah, Ramadi area. It's 2003. And we were put up. We were the first ones at this base. Our platoon took over this jet hangar. So protected jet hangar, you know, completely protected, because otherwise the Iraqis would have got blown up all the time by all of our air stuff throughout the 90s and 2000s, right? So we're hanging out.
It was a hardened bunker.
Hardened bunker. It was, like, really nice. Doors, these huge steel doors that we could close, and we had this little tiny door we could open with it. And we got there in the summer, well, September, so it was hot still. And we had a bunch of Class 4 that we acquired because we were really good at acquiring things in our platoon. And we're going to make rooms, and everything was all set up, right? And people got upset that we had this, and they didn't, I think. This is my perspective. But they wanted us closer to the rest of the battalion, rest of the company, which was about a mile away. And we would walk over there, whatever. We'd run, we'd take our vehicles over there. But they wanted to have us closer so they can, for whatever reason. We're still going to work in this area, but we weren't going to sleep there anymore. So all of the NCOs, myself included, young E5, just turned E5 basically a few months before, we all came together, the platoon, and we went to the first sergeant, who was also the acting sergeant major, and said, hey, we don't think it's a good idea. Like, for one, you know, we have this hardened bunker that we have improved upon. It's clean. It's protected. We have heaters. So, you know, everything's going to be warm. And, you know, we're going to continue to improve this position. And he took our advice, he took all of this, and he threw it in the toilet and flushed it hard. And he's like, no, you will move over here. And I'm the sergeant major, and this is what's going to happen. Because we had nowhere else to go to, because the next step's the sergeant major. Well, the commander, obviously the commander didn't care. He was too worried about his parents or whatever. And we ended up moving right around December. So right as the temperatures are really getting cold, we move over these tents, which, like you said, Rod, were treated in kerosene, because that's what you do in the desert to help, you know, protect it from wind, right? And then they were wired by, I still don't know what country the contractors were from, but some contractors came, not American contractors, came in and wired all of these tents for power and for the ACs.
I thought they were locals, like local contractors.
I don't know if they were locals or not. They were, I don't remember. I don't even know if we were actually really new, if they were locals, but they were not Americans for sure. They were definitely either locals, or they were brought in from another country as, like, just hired help to do that.
Right. Okay.
So platoon of people, we had like 40 some people, right? And so we had like 10 tents. And on New Year's Day, we had like basically a day off, 2004, where myself, and you guys can tell where you guys were at, but for me, I was to, like, work out. We just got this gym equipment. So me and a couple of the guys were putting, and some of the females were putting all the gym equipment together out of this Connex. We were really excited, because before that we were using, like, you know, 45 pound, like the water jugs, and we'd have like the rickety benches. We had some, the guys who welded really well, and they put some stuff together for us, but it was rickety and dangerous. And so we were excited to get actual equipment. And I'll never forget this other woman, this young soldier from one of the companies that walks over to us. And she's like, hey, are you guys in Bravo Company? I was like, yeah, what's up? She's like, I think your tents are on fire. And then nonchalantly walks away. And I'm like, wait, what did you just say? And I run over, and there's like a two or three or four of the tents are already on fire. So we're like, what the hell? And again, day off, right? So some people are sleeping. I was putting the gym together. Where were you guys at? Do you remember where you were at?
I was on gate guard. I was on gate guard with Snoop. Yeah. And we could see the smoke from the gate. Mm-hmm. And he comes over to me and he's like, that looks like that's by our tents. I'm like, maybe. And then the smoke just got darker and thicker. And then it was gone. Because it happened pretty fast.
I was actually down at the shop with Quinn because we, by some chance, we finally got some work in, right? So we was like, hey, let's go down there and check it out. And then, yeah, sure enough, look, there's a lot of smoke. I think our tents are on fire. And we saw the fire trucks going down the road. It's like, well, maybe they'll stop. And like, because our tent was at the end. It's like, maybe they'll save it. Then we hear, pow, 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 pow. Yeah, nobody's going near that. Like,
yeah,
our stuff's gone.
So I'm there. So you guys were away. So I'm like right there. And again, there was people like sleeping. So Sergeant Whitmer? I think it was Whitmer and Gibbs, right? Yeah. So Whitmer was there for sure. And he's going tented, like yelling, get up, there's a fire. He's like grabbing stuff and throwing it out, right? I'm just not good with names, so I apologize. One of the kids comes running out. He thought we were under attack because all of our basic loads of ammunition, luckily there weren't any explosives. They kept the grenades and stuff within the company arms area, which I think was just next to the commander's bunk. I'm not sure, but it was like in the company talk. But all of the 249, the M4 rounds, all of that stuff was just going off all around us. So it was like, ding, ding, ding. What's that ding, ding, ding noise? It's like hitting the barn. It's like, those are all the rounds. So now there's like, we're all like, oh crap, we have to get out of here. So we're still trying to like go through the tents to make sure nobody's in the tents, and we're still unsure. So people are coming out. Like one kid came out with a helmet on and his underwear and his rifle. And he's like running up, and we're like within the wire. So I don't know what he thought, but he was asleep. You know, it's he heard a bunch of rounds.
He thought we were being overrun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was actually a couple of kids, I think. But like we finally got everybody and got them behind that barn. As the rounds are just going off, thousands of rounds going off all around us. We're really lucky that nobody died, but we lost all of our stuff. And I think the cherry of it, you know, you mentioned like when people found out that they were yelling at us being out of uniform, but then found out, you know, what happened and we're sorry. But the cherry was when the lawyers came. We're like, hey, you can, here's how you claim all the stuff. And, you know, young soldiers like we were, some of the kids, they would go to that little PX every single day and they would buy the DVDs and the CDs and the computers and whatever because they had nothing else to spend their money on and they were addicted to, well, there's nothing else to do. So they would just get that kind of stuff. Like you can only claim so many CDs. Like you obviously didn't have that many. So that you had like a cutoff of how much you could claim and then a depreciated value. So I don't know about you. I think I got most of my money back because I claimed it the right way, the way they wink-winked at us a little bit. But yeah. It was really sad that at the end of the day, like you're not even going to get what was taken because it was obviously your fault that there was a fire. That's kind of how it felt.
Well, I don't know if you remember this. Well, first of all, 10 days. That's how long we lasted in the tents.
Yeah. 10. That's right. That's right.
That's right. Yep. Yeah.
10 days. And it was cold. It was so cold. At the end of it, I was like, because they wouldn't let us build in that all the way in the, that jet shelter that we stopped. We were like, okay, well, we can't build whatever. So by the end, I was like, all right, I'm getting kind of cold, actually. It was getting a little cold in that thing because we didn't have enough heaters for everything until we ended up moving back in there like 10 days later, and that's where we spent the rest of our time.
But I remember initially they were talking about like, wow, I mean, you might not get reimbursed at all. Like that, oh, wow, you're in combat. Like you're not going to get anything. And I remember it was a brigade commander. He had just come in that year, and he's like, no. You're going to compensate these guys for what they lost. Like, I don't want to hear it. So good on him. I forget what his name was. He was an Asian guy. I forgot what his name.
I don't know what his name was either.
I got some friend. I married Will Carmen, and her dad is retired. Loggy 06, and his best friend retired Loggy 06. So, like, all of, like, our battalion commander, all of them, they're all, like, we're buddies. They all knew each other. Because it's the same age group, same year group. So I'll tell some of these stories. Like, oh, yeah, I knew that idiot. He was an idiot. Yeah.
You know what's funny? When I was ETSing from active duty, they tried to charge me for all the gear that I lost.
Really?
In that fire, yeah. And I had to jump through a bunch of extra hoops to prove that it was a field loss because of that fire. So like, oh, you don't have this, this, and this. It turned back into CIF. I was like, well, yeah, because it all burnt to the ground.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about right.
It burned to the ground. But that, like, smell, it lingered the rest of that deployment. I remember that? And it burned. Because I went through, you know, we tried to find some stuff. Because, like, you know, family would send us stuff. And there was, like, you know, little different things that, you know, I was trying to find. I had a ring that I had. It was, like, a family ring that I just probably shouldn't have brought on deployment. But I had the last deployment before that. It was kind of a lucky charm because this is my second deployment by this time in 03, 04. And gone. Yeah, I lost all that crap.
It burned. Yeah, I remember all the, what was it? All the supplements that everybody was taking.
Mm-hmm.
I remember walking up to where my tent was and where my bunk was. And the smoldering remains of my Contico box that were underneath my cot, and I was able to pry the lid open and get my half charred wallet out of it, and the social security card and my license survived, but that was it. Everything else was just melted plastic into like one giant blob.
I was in full PT, like I said, and I had my wallet on me. I don't know why. I never did. So it was like, just again, by the grace of God, so I didn't lose like my IDs or anything. But again, most people lost everything. You know, it was painful. And yeah, then they started donating. Remember they had like the big donation? Like, So I've talked to people about this, like from that were around that time, not just on that. Like base,
other companies other were donating clothes and stuff.
Yeah. So we got some of that stuff was donated from across like that area, from like different, not even just the 82nd. Like people were like, oh yeah, I remember that. I was like, we donated clothes. I was like, that's crazy. It's weird to be on the receiving end of that stuff and not, you know.
National Guard donating clothes to
us. It was like well known. This was like a thing, like these poor suckers, they lost all their stuff. We got to give them clothes.
I mean, you know. Well, Tim, I got to tell you this. Going to CIF as an E8, heaven.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it was.
It was great. I had people helping me with my cart. It's like, whoa, Master Sergeant, let me help you out with that. It's like, I don't know what to do. It's like, come to the front of the line. It's like, are you sure? Yeah, don't worry. They'll wait.
to be fair, though, like, CIF changed over the 20-year, almost 20, you know, 15-year difference between the 22 that got out. Because CIF
definitely
was miserable at Fort Bragg back when, you know, Tim left and I left the 82nd. And then when I got out, when I retired, we retired around the same time, Rod. And it was like, they're phenomenal over there now. They're like super helpful. They just, you know, they write everything off, but they were like so kind versus like, they're just trying to get you to pay for everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I had a similar experience. When I went to MEPS to go back into the reserves as prior enlisted, oh my God, they treat you like royalty if you're prior enlisted. Oh yeah. Like I remember going through the first time and it was like, you know, I was Oliver Twist and, you know, they trying to scrape me off the bottom of their shoe.
Yeah.
Going back through, man, front of the line for everything. You don't have to wait. They were nice to you. It was weird.
Real people.
Yeah, exactly. It was so bizarre.
That's fine.
Hey, when you guys enlisted, did you have any clue what your job was going to be?
I went in there specifically asking for something in electronics.
That's, yeah, same. That's the only thing I wanted, something in electronics. So I could take it with me because I was going to do 3 years and get out. So I wanted something that could, like, grab a hold in, like, two. But that's – I had no idea what I was going to do. Luckily I was there and they were like – you know, I passed all their tests or whatever, and then like all the health tests. And like, hey, you're pretty healthy. You want to go to airborne school? And I was like, what's airborne school? What's airborne? They're like, you can jump on airplanes and we'll give you $150 a month. And I was like, yes, that sounds awesome. Let's do that. Because I didn't know what that was.
I got the same speech. And all I heard was $150 a month.
Yeah. I always wanted to buy airplanes. And I was like, that sounds cool. I'll do that. That's legit. Otherwise, yeah. I would have ended up at Fort Hood or something or whatever it's called now. I'm like, that would have been awful.
Yeah, when I was at MEPS, they were started off with like, hey, do you want to be a cook? It's like, wait, what? It's like, no, not at all. It's like, I told you I wanted to do, like, be one of those guys with the bridges, you know, doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know if we can give you that. Like, you have to score really high for those. It's like, okay, well, what else do you have? It's like, how about a diesel mechanic. You want to be a diesel mechanic? It's like, not really. It's like, how about, do you want to wash like laundry? It's like, what? Like, what did I score? It's like, well, you only scored 97. It's like, out of what, a million? It's like, no, out of 99. It's like, so what are you saying? Well, we can't give you those jobs. So I ended up like leaving, like taking a break for like an hour. And then they came back. It's like, wow, we have this land combat missile system electronics repairer.
Right, they make
what the hell is
so
that?
Sexy.
Yeah, super like, sexy.
It's like, what the hell is that? It's like, I don't know, but you get a $5,000 bonus. It's like, I'll take it.
That's so
funny. Yeah, I found out I enlisted at the wrong time of the year. I came in and I went to MEPS in July.
That's what I did. Yeah, same. It was the same. But it wasn't much change from then either. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. We were all in the same, like, AIT and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I went in, so I got hurt. I did something stupid, like, hurt my elbow. I hyperextended it, so, like, it went, like, 45 degrees the opposite direction, which is still, ooh, I mean, 27 years later, I'll be lifting, or I'll be doing something, raking like I was yesterday, and I'll be like, oh, why does my elbow hurt? I'm like, oh, yeah, that stupid thing I did that caused me to join the Army, so... You think, so any young kids are probably not watching this, but if they do, those like things you do in your past do, in this case, I would say it wouldn't haunt me because it really like changed the course of my life for the positive. I think I turned out pretty well. But at the time, you know, I was really distraught. I didn't know what I was going to do. I lost a scholarship. I wasn't going to be able to go to college I wanted to go to because my mom came down. She's like, hey, she owned a restaurant in town. She's like, hey, we're going to have to close the restaurant, so I can't help you with college. And this, I had already graduated high school. So like it's July. I got hurt on the 3rd or 4th of July in 2000. And I was like, what am I going to do? So we got a big fight. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't stay here. And I just left and I joined the Army and like on a whim, basically. But yeah, same, like there wasn't much to choose from, but I was like, I just wanted to do electronics. Cause my uncle, I keep talking about, like, he was in electronics and he had a job after and he's, you know, liked it and whatever. He's a pretty smart guy. So I was like, well, let me at least do that because I don't want to be in the infantry because that sounds like I'm going to die in like 5 seconds if I go to combat. Because again, I'm thinking of like Vietnam movies I used to watch, like Platoon and all those movies, like Hamburger
Full Metal Jacket.
Like, so that's what I'm thinking in my head. Like, so when you say cook, I would have been thinking like, is that the guy who does the potatoes like the whole time, like all the whole deployment? Like that sounds like what I don't want to do that either.
Just like, I don't want to be on KP all the time.
Yeah, I wouldn't know what KP was, but I definitely would have been like, cook equals potatoes. And I feel like I don't want to peel potatoes all day, every day. So that's funny.
I remember Forbes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The E7. I remember talking to him and
when I first showed up there.
He was like, yeah, man, you should have gone like to wash the laundry. Like, you would have been Sergeant Major.
That's right.
You're gonna start making right away. Like, nobody wants that job. Like, so it's like there's no competition. It's like,
I have a job anymore.
Like, that's one way to look at it. It's like,
man, he was a good dude. I really liked him. And like juxtaposed between like him and Brown too, because it was funny.
Night and day.
Yeah.
He had that giant bushy mustache.
Huge. Yeah. He got screwed, man. When he came home from, I think that deployment or one deployment, whatever. And he went to retire. His wife left him like at the same time. Like she was like leaving him. So he like changed. I don't know if you guys remember, he like came back like one day and he was like wearing like Quicksilver clothes or something. He was like this like old, like vet kind of guy, that big bushy, the mustache is gone. Like he's just trying to look a lot younger.
I remember that.
Yeah. And then, so I'm like, oh, well, good luck, man. Cause he had a little hemp. I remember like the hemp necklace he had. It was like really trying. And then she ended up leaving for some younger guy anyway. I was like, oh, God, that's. Then I saw him again. He worked for Raytheon. He had that bush mustache again. Like, just be yourself, man. But she took like all that stuff. Like, ugh, I felt terrible.
That sucks.
Sorry to bring that down. Yeah. He's a good dude.
Did either of you keep in touch with Wade?
Mm-mm. You know, I remember I tried contacting him shortly after I got off of active duty, because I knew that he had gone to work for Raytheon.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
And I was trying to see if there was any openings wherever he was at with Raytheon. And I think nothing ever came of it, but I think he responded to me, but that was kind of where it ended. That was back in like late 2007, 2006, maybe. Yeah.
I think the last time I saw him was in 2008, and I went back over to the 82nd to go see him in the old shop, and he was still there, but that's what, 16 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Horsehead, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't kept up with too many people. I'm really bad. I always want to keep up with people, then like just life is just, but you know what? Every time I talk to people though, that from the past, like it's always like we never left each other, you know, like this right here. It doesn't talking with y'all. It's like the relationship's still there. It's just on pause.
Yeah. That's kind of what I like about this. Cause now I can talk to people that I want to talk to, not people I have to talk to because it's a working relationship. It's like, there's this one guy, I reference him a lot on this podcast, Benny Goodtimes. He is, without a doubt, I don't care how stupid you think Beetlejuice was or anybody else that you met in the military, Benny Goodtimes is, without a doubt, the dumbest person who has ever walked the face of the earth. A moron. I didn't give him that name. The Peruvians gave him that name. All right. I just happened to fall in after he left, and I had to make like, sweet Jesus, what were you doing here, bro? And that guy, he's a moron, but I don't ever have to see him again. I don't have to talk to him. You know, if he needed help with something, yeah, I'll help you out. I could probably tell you that I think you're a big moron, but sure, yeah. I'll help you out. And that's what I like about this now. It's like I can just stay in touch with people that I want to stay in touch with, and
selectively.
I like to see, like, I tell people that I work with, the E8s, like, I hear all their theories. Well, I think you can find a job if you just apply yourself. It's like, well, how would you know? You haven't tried. It's like, well, I have a plan. Awesome, dude. What are you counting on? Why bring leadership? Never mind. We're done here.
Yeah. Don't you know who I'm a veteran? Like,
yeah. It's like I bring leadership.
I might get your conversation, but that's it.
Oh, so you're saying that you're applying for
has never had leadership? Then how is it like functioning? How is it still in business?
Yeah, there's this stuff just bothers me, man. I love veterans, and all I want to do is help people. I really truly do. I really want to help mentor or help them with opportunities because it's a population of people who, you know, even if they're the dumbest person on the earth, you know, at least they volunteer to help, right? At least they put themselves out there, especially in a time of war, multiple wars. So I do appreciate that. But that doesn't make you deserve, you know, everything in the world. You still have to work for the things you have. It might give you an opportunity, it might open the door for you, but it's still on you to take that opportunity and run for it, or run with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I try to tell people, you know, when I was younger, before I joined the military, I thought I deserved things, right? Like, I don't know if you understand this, but I graduated high school.
I know, with a high GPA. I'm a teenager. I knew everything.
With a high GPA, so I deserve everything. And now, bro, I just want an opportunity. And like, if you tell me no, that's fine. I just want a chance to compete. That's all.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I don't care what your reason is. You can tell me, you're too old, you're too fat, you're too bald, whatever. You're too Mexican, you're not Mexican enough, whatever it is, you know. I heard that in my journeys in South America. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're not a real American. Wait, what? Then I heard, well, you're not a real Mexican either. It's like, well, what the hell am I?
What am I? Yeah.
It's like, well, you're one of those.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an option on the little boxes when I apply to jobs. One of those, but that's all I'm looking for is just an opportunity, and you know, hopefully we can help some guys, people who are retiring or whatever. Like, hey, you're not alone. we've all been through it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let some of that ego go.
Let it all go, man. Let it all go. And don't let that self or that sense of entitlement go. And remember where you came from. And people will relate to that a lot better. Like, I there's a lot of opportunity out there for people. If you're willing to work for it, you know, and there's a lot of resources out there too. So if our veterans are watching this, like there's so many resources out there. So if you're in a tough spot, whether it's, you know, you're getting out of the stressful situation because you got out of the military and you're transitioning, you don't know what to do, or, you know, your family's going through a hard time, or, you know, PTSD is a real thing. You know, I suffer with it a lot, you know, there are resources out there to help people. And just reach out, man. Cause I would rather, not to get emotional about it, man, but I've lost more friends for suicide and opiates. And that's, you know, across, you know, civilians and military opiates, and people just trying to numb the pain. You know, there's so many resources out there. People want to help. Shout out to Jesus, man. He saved me. He saved me. And I was a real alcoholic, for a long time, high functional alcoholic, not to toot my own horn, but I was a high functioning alcoholic. You know, but I'm drinking at least a bottle of vodka or whiskey a night, every night. I wouldn't even blink an eye. I'd be like, oh man, I should probably get two. You know what I mean? And just causing pain to the people who love me around me. So I've been there. I've been through all of that. And, you know, I was really saved by Christ. It'll help other people too. But even if that's not your the way the path you want to go on, or you're not ready for that, there's resources out there that people want to help. There's plenty of people out there that will help. Just call, man. Call, text, email, something. Because that it's hard to do it. It's hard to say, you know, I need help. But just do it, and then it'll come upon you. People will be there to help you. You don't kill yourself. Like I'm not sure to be lied about it, but it's like it breaks my heart, because we've all thought about it, but I mean, I've been in some dark places in my life, and you know, luckily I didn't go down that path, but it could have easily gone down that path. So just reach out to somebody and we'll help you out, man. I'll help you. Call me, email me. I'll put you into, you know, contact with people who are really trained to do that kind of stuff. Sorry, I just want to throw that out there because I think it's really important.
No, you're right. I try to explain this to people. So if you go to combat and you get shot or you break a bone or something, right? Like that's a badge of courage, and you're told to talk about it, right? You're given a Purple Heart. Go out there. Like, we're going to parade you around to show everybody your Purple Heart. Mm-hmm. But when you come back and you have problems up here, it's like, shh, don't talk about it. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
And it's like, well, you're taught to be ashamed of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, and I don't have a problem talking about it anymore. I don't have a problem talking about, yeah, I've thought about starting a 9mm multiple times.
Yeah, man.
This past holiday season, I thought about it a couple of times because the holiday season is hard on me. But I don't want to do that. If I do that, then I can't go see Iron Maiden in November. Right.
You know what? I mean, I talk about Jesus, man. And that's really what really truly got that monkey off my back. Get the alcohol, get all those bad thoughts off my back. And so I really praise that. But what kept me, the one thing that really kept that thought from taking hold all the way, although it was close a bunch of times, was the likelihood, and I don't know if this is true, I feel like it is, I never really looked it up, but in my head it was always true, the likelihood of your children committing suicide after you have is way higher.
It increases by at least 25%.
Yeah, and that right there, that made me think, like, take a second and think, like, okay, well, what is this going to do to my family? What is this going to do to my children? Like, yeah, maybe I'm not in a good place. Maybe I'm not being a good father. Maybe I'm not being the good man. But I can get better, man. I can give me that opportunity. Like you said, I can get better. And that opened that window for you know, to get better like that. And that, and again, I keep saying it, but like, I really, you know, brought to Christ, especially over the last couple of years, just really grabbed a hold of my faith. And, it's pulled me through a lot of dark, dark times, because alcohol wasn't doing it, man. Alcohol. And that's all you have in the military is alcohol, and they just shove it down your throat, and it's great. You have good times, and it's all super fun. It's all super good. And then it's not anymore. And for me anyway, I was just in a drain. And, it was like for the second time in my second marriage was starting to drain. And I was just like, this can't be my life. I don't want to not be here, but I don't want to be here and live this life anymore. I got to be better.
You know, I think part of the issue too is that when you're in the military, is they don't give you any tools to cope with those things. They don't teach you. You know what I mean? There's a lot of knowledge that you can use and you can't do it all by yourself, obviously. But you know, people don't have coping tools, and that's why people turn to alcohol. That's why I turn to alcohol. You know, is because I could deal with this, or I could just numb it away and forget it.
Yep. And it was fun. We had so much fun when we were younger drinking. It was great. Yeah. And all the friends kind of.
Yeah. But it wasn't.
I don't know. I drink by myself, so it wasn't really.
Oh yeah. Well, and that's what it is. Like, I always had so much fun when I was out. I'm obviously an extrovert. I talk everyone's ear off, but
what?
No, it's crazy. I don't know. But you know, for those introverts like Timmy, I would like, hey, it's time to go, man. Let's get outside, because he'd be drinking by himself too. Let's like, we're going to the bars, brother. We're gonna go have fun. We're gonna go find some girls. We're gonna do something. And it was so much fun. But then you know, it all end up by yourself eventually, and sucking down those same bottles, and then feeling like you're alone, even though people are all around you, and they love you, and you still feel alone. And that sucks. Super sucks. But it doesn't have to end that way. It can get better. You just got to put that alcohol down. It's not going to help.
So for me,
at least for me, that's how I was.
I didn't want my children to know that I was a coward.
Yeah. That's, yep. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you might think I'm a bad father. You might think I'm a horrible husband. You might think I'm a worse person, but I don't want you to know definitively that I'm a coward.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like I say, you know, I have that Iron Maiden concert in November, right? Well, I set goals for myself, right? Like, I ran the half marathon in Myrtle Beach a couple of weeks ago, and next year I'm going to run the full marathon, and I'm going to try to qualify for the Boston.
Yeah. Good luck, brother.
And they're just little goals that I set for like a year in advance. So, mm-hmm. Well, I can't do it today because I have to go run that marathon next year. Right. And no, that helps awesome, me. Dude. That helps me.
Dude, I'm the same way, man. I think I told you before this started. I need to have those goals too. And I'm very goal oriented anyway. So like, I have like mental goals, things like I'm going to read this book, or I'm going to, you know, do the class or whatever, but I had to have physical goals too. And I didn't really realize that until I got out of the military, and it got out during COVID. So I was already, again, I was an alcoholic and I was just drinking like crazy. And then COVID happened, and it was just like, well, I have nothing else to do. Literally nothing else to do. I'm not going to work. I'm not retired yet. I'm just going to drink my face off all day, every day. And, I blew up like a balloon. So I got out of the military. I'm like 180 now. That's my healthy weight. I was 115, like 35 pounds of weight. It was crazy. I just look, and all my gain weight in my stomach and my neck. So I just look like a big fat, just gross. And it's just more depressing. Just kind of like in that cycle of like, I don't like the way I look. I don't like the way I feel. I don't like the way I am, you know, and I'll just drink more and then numb that away. And then I had that shift of like a lot of like realizations. But one of them, like you were saying, is setting those physical goals. So last year I did the, Spartan race, the 10K, and then this year I'm doing the trifecta. So just, which keeps me in the gym, like that just keeps me running, not fast. I don't need to win. I just want to do it. You know, I don't need to be the best at everything. I just want to challenging myself to, you know, I get up. I'm already up early anyway. I don't sleep very much. So I get up, instead of like hanging out and doing some nonsense, watching the news and getting depressed about the world, I go to the gym and I get that energy out and I get those endorphins going, or I go for a run at lunch. And I get those endorphins going, and like it clears my mind. I think through things. I don't drink as much or at all. And it's a much better place, man. And therapy. Therapy is important. And, like, talk to people. Just talking, like, this is therapy to me. Like, talking to you guys about this stuff, talking about those old times, talking about stuff I've never talked about, the suicide stuff. Like, talking it out makes you just get it out loud, hear it. And, like, it just, like, oh, crap, that's a real thing. And that was, I don't know, kind of work through it instead of, like, it's in your head and you're thinking about it nonstop and you're spiraling and no one's thinking about it, no one knows or, you know, whatever.
No, I think that's great advice. That was probably one of the single biggest things that helped me was therapy. And like you were talking about earlier, how we were, you know, don't mention it, don't talk to anybody, don't let anybody know that you're having issues. I paid for that out of my own pocket while I was still in because I didn't want anybody to know, you know? Yeah.
That makes sense. It's important. And I'm glad you did.
It is.
I love you, buddy. And it'd break my heart if you weren't here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Likewise, my friend.
So my dissertation topic started off as a comparative analysis of the United States and Colombia, the factors that lead veterans to join extremist groups, right? Right now, I'm doing a lot of literature research, just the literature review, and I'm looking at the gaps between like the Department of Defense and the Department of Veterans Affairs, like, because there's no handoff. Mm-mm. Like, you get treatment from here, but once they realize, like, we can't fix you, you're no longer of service to us, we're just going to let you go. There's, like, no handoff to this organization. And part of what I'm finding out is that the administrators that work at the Department of, at the VA, just need some retraining. That seems where a bit of the hiccup is, because the providers seem to, when they get you, actually provide quality treatment.
Yeah.
But it's from the time where you're getting past those administrators or a bunch of retirees and just upset. And I don't know if it's good to know or bad, but it's kind of the same thing in Colombia, but they don't have a VA. It's what their system that they work with. Just getting to the providers.
It's real. I mean, that's interesting, man. And it's true. Like the provider I have, you know, I'm local in the Fayetteville area. And I go to that Sanford. I mean, it's phenomenal. Like, and but you're right. Like getting to that point was painful, but now that I have the provider, I just message. And like, if you are in the VA system and you're having problems, they're required to respond to your message on eHealthy Vet within like a 72 hour period. And they have to do it, or it's like a really bad problem for them. So if you have one of those providers or one of those systems that like it's not treating you the way you know you should be treated, start messaging, and then they will get back to you immediately. But I do use that app a lot because I just find it's easier. Instead of trying to call, I just type a little message and they get back to me. But there have been, you know, phenomenal. I am a disabled vet. I may look pretty healthy because I've been taking care of myself for Lent. I gave up. Obviously alcohol is gone, but caffeine and bread and all the crap. So that's been really helpful, but the inside is still painful and broken. So getting those appointments to go to the chiropractor or to the neurologist or to, you know, whatever other provider has been imperative to keep me, you know, keep the pain pain down so I can work on mental health. So I can work on other things so I can be there for my family and have that work-life balance. So I think it's really important. And like you said, like the providers want to help. They're there, you know, 99% of them want to be there for you to help you, but you have to do your part too, you know?
You know, I get that too. It's like, well, you don't look like you're disabled. Well, I don't know if you can look into my head.
Right.
I don't know if you have that capability. Or secondly,
X-ray.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know if you like conduct an MRI through your eyes, but to look at both of my shoulders, my hip, my spine, and basically the left side of my body is useless.
Left. Yeah. Mine too. It's funny.
And from 21 years of doing PLFs on my left side, cause I never landed on my right. It was either my left or my ass. That was it.
Yeah. That makes sense. I never put those two together. My whole left side's messed up too. It's like my left shoulder, left ankle, left hip. And I've never thought about that.
But now that you mention it, I was also a left side PLF guy.
it just felt easier for me going to my left.
Yeah. I can just do it now. I go on my right. It still feels weird. Like I can't fall to the right. I fall to the left. That is 100% it, man. That you just solved that mystery.
And that's what I tell people. It's like the ID blast and the RPG. Yeah. That did a number on me. For 21 years of landing out of airplanes on my left side. Yeah. It took its toll. You guys don't see that. But like when I raise my arms, this arm goes up. This is up. And this is as far as this one goes.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
There's a good surgeon. I had my left shoulder done. So they removed my labrum, and now it's like, I don't, probably can't see it in the video, but so they don't, at least at this place, they do like real, like, up-to-date techniques. So they don't repair labrum because you're most likely going to have that torn again really soon after your surgery. So they removed it and they tied it into my bicep, into the bone, like lower down. And it took, 12, 16 weeks and it was healed. And now it definitely works better, which is nice. Still hurts sometimes, but it works better. So Raleigh hand to shoulder center. So shout out to them. They're phenomenal. Those doctors are great. My wife had a surgery there. She had nerve damage in her wrist due to some malpractice somewhere else, and they fixed that. So just shout out to those guys. They're phenomenal.
Well, my left shoulder, they said, it's like, yeah, you're sorry, buddy. The only thing we can do is like shoulder replacement. Because your labrum has been gone so long that like the bottom of the humerus, it's like growing a goatee. Like
damn,
trying to support itself. It's like, and you see all those little spots, like those are like blisters on bone, if that makes any sense. It's like, that doesn't sound good. It's like, yeah, you're not supposed to have that. Like, you see all these little spikes that are forming. It's like that's your body trying to compensate for the lack of a labrum. It's like, if you continue to lift weights, it'll probably last another year. If you stop, I don't know, 10, 15 years. It's like, we'll see. I don't know.
That's brutal.
It's like, awesome. So.
Well, man, I would reach out to them anyway, just for an opinion, because, or even for your other shoulder, because like they're phenomenal. Like I have full motion in my left arm again, which it was way more similar to you. I didn't have all the issues you're talking about and have a beard on my humerus. I can't grow a beard in my humerus either.
The only reason why I don't go through with the surgery is because I want to play golf. And they said, if you get shoulder replacement surgery, like you're not playing golf again. I was like, then I'll wait.
Well, it sounds like you're not playing golf in a few years anyway. Might as well do something.
Well, if I get one more week out of golf, then that's one more week. another year and a half, whatever I can get. I don't care. Like, I don't understand, Chris, like being in damn Latin America, Southeast Asia and Africa and damn Iraq, there's not a whole lot of golf going on. So,
I mean, I've been to catch up fancy on countries that you're talking about. Oh, it's like fancy countries, but I've been to Iraq and Afghanistan fancy a lot. All those, what do you say, Latin America and Southeast Asia? That sounds cool. Wish I'd been there.
You know what?
We mostly went to the sand trap countries, okay?
Well, yes. And everybody thinks that it's like, oh, it's so great. Yeah. I wasn't in the capital. It's like, hey, we're going to put you like right in the middle of malaria and dengue central.
No, that's where you're going to stay. I know. That's good. I know. It's the same problems, different areas.
I wanted to go on Naked and Afraid. It's like, man, I'll just gain like 20, 30 pounds and like I'm already fat. I'll just be fatter. I'll go on there. I'll last it. But then I saw where they were going. It's like, you're sending them to Guyana? It's like, sorry, buddy. Like, I was getting eaten alive by mosquitoes, and I had full pants and long sleeve shirts on. I'm not going naked. No way. So we're going on, about an hour and a half now. So,
yeah, I'm at the call here.
Any shout outs or anything you might want to promote?
No, you were asking me?
Both of you.
Oh, okay. Sorry. No, just last time, I shout out my wonderful wife who puts up with my nonsense and my craziness. She's my best friend and my other half, So big shout out to her.
So yeah, Jim, same, man. Your props, do you do that just for yourself or is that like a side business?
Mainly just for myself. I mean, I have made one or two other small things for other people, but I typically just do because there were things that I wanted that I couldn't buy anywhere. And it was the same reason that I made the Proton Pack from the first Ghostbusters movie as well. And that took me like, oh God, almost eight months to do that, to build that one. But it came out well, and it hangs on the other side of the wall over there.
It's awesome.
Looks legit. So it's all just for my own personal enjoyment.
Well, you might want to consider starting like a small business, maybe doing something on the side. If you know, I got my Vegeta in my office. You can't see it, but there's a lot of Dragon Ball Z stuff going on up here. So I like going to the cons, and you'd be surprised at how many people want to go to the cons dressed up, but they don't actually want to build their own costume.
No, you're absolutely right.
I'm one of
The con, the Phoenix Comic Con that happened right after I finished the Proton Pack, I went as a Ghostbuster with that Proton Pack because it has the full lights and sounds that the movie packs have. It's like a 99% movie accurate replica. And I got mobbed by people who wanted to take pictures with it and stuff. And it was crazy. I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, it's insane. I go every year to the one here in Raleigh. I get the VIP pass because I'm old. I don't want to stand in line and wait. And plus, I'm not 19 anymore, so I can afford the VIP pass. Move away, kid. I don't care if you're 8 years old and you've been waiting here 5 hours.
I got the fast pass, kid. Move it.
You know who I am. Someday you'll be here when you're old, like me.
Yeah, and, you know, I like going. Actually, I do get the VIP pass, but the people I want to see, there isn't a big line anyway, so it doesn't really matter. It's, you know, I'm not going there to see the guys from Twilight or all the vampire movies from, like, the, early 2010s. So
I'm going there to see the guy who played Jason Voorhees.
I like to go see the old wrestlers.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Like, bro, you got old, like, not in a good way.
There's that show now. What is it? Dark Behind the Ring or whatever it is. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then there are a lot of those Rogan podcasts, too. I like to listen to them also, like the Ric Flair and Hogan, all those guys. It's cool stories, man. It reminds me when I was, like, a young kid. And it's interesting to hear, like, the stories. Like, when you think what's going on and then you hear what's actually going on, it's, like, 100% different. You're like, that is wild. And you were treated like a big piece of shit the entire time. And you were my hero. Like, for all of us when we were kids, like, looking up to these guys, like, I want to do that. That looks amazing. And then you realize, like, oh, it sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. So, shout outs. You know, I don't really have any, except for my daughter. She's graduating May 3rd from the University of Alabama.
Nice.
In hospitality management. And should be hearing in the next couple of weeks if she's accepted to Duke for their MBA program.
Nice.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats.
I said, you can apply to Duke or go to graduate school. Or you can get a job. It's like, I'll go to graduate school. Good choice. It's like, avoid reality as long as you can.
Not the cheap choice, for sure, but definitely a good choice.
Well, I didn't tell them all. I was like, hey, you're not applying to UNC Pembroke. No offense to anybody who went to Pembroke. But if I'm paying for it, like, you're going to apply to Duke, buddy.
Yeah,
like, that's bad. Okay. So don't, you know, if you can get it in there, then go. Like, don't settle for what you think you can afford.
Yeah, no, that's good advice.
Reach for the stars, buddy. Reach for the stars. So until next time, everybody, take it easy. Hope you got something out of this podcast, and we'll talk to you later. Zot, zot, zot. Roll Tide.